Yet at his very first formal session, Rainieri was treated to a succession of luminous materializations, including that of Helena, who handed her father a flower still wet with dew and spoke a few words of greeting. It was really her, Rainieri states with his usual economy of words, with no doubt at all. At the same session, at least 10 stones of varying sizes were thrown violently around the room, each one falling at the feet of the person whose name had been called out by a disembodied voice. The room was dark at the time, and Rainieri reckoned that flinging so many stones around without hitting anybody would have been impossible under normal conditions. At his next session, he was able to witness the materialization of one of the best-known spirits on the Brazilian scene, Sheila, said to be a German nurse who died in Berlin at the end of World War II. Her arrival was preceded by flashes of colored lightning, after which her luminous figure simply appeared out of the darkness, clothed in light, carrying in her hands what looked like a pale green stone, which she used to treat a woman present who was suffering from a liver condition. The stone was described as a transmitter of radioactivity as yet unknown on Earth. Rainieri noted that light was radiated by Sheila as if from the fibers of her clothing, enabling the half dozen people in the room to see each other clearly, including the medium who, as usual, was sound asleep on a bed. He was satisfied that such an effect could not have been simulated in the small room without elaborate electrical equipment, which was not to be found. It is only fair to point out that at this early stage Rainieri was still new to the world of psychic, psi, phenomena, and only later was he to take more detailed notes of what he saw. As I know from my own experience, first contact with such phenomena can be somewhat overwhelming, and it takes time before one can settle down to an objective frame of mind. Shortly after these sessions, Rainieri returned to Rio de Janeiro, where he was living at the time, and brought Peixoto Tano along to the small spiritist center he ran himself. Here, as he points out, he had the chance to check everything personally without ever finding evidence of fraud. If there had been, I would have been the first to know. One Saturday evening, a session was held to remove the appendix of a named woman who was obviously in considerable pain. For this, the same mysterious pale green strip that Rainieri had seen applied to Peixoto Tano in the hotel bedroom was brought along. When placed on the woman's body, her appendix became visible on it, as was witnessed by her sister, a fourth-year medical student. On the following Thursday, the woman came back to the center to give a talk, speaking in a loud voice and walking normally. Something extraordinary had clearly taken place inside her. It is possible that we had been deceived, Rainieri writes, but can a simple mystification eliminate pains and appendices? If so, we should regard mystification as a profoundly therapeutic action. Yet another intriguing piece of equipment turned up at another session, brought along by a friendly spirit doctor. It looked like a deep dish of a gelatinous substance, and again it was pale green in color and transparent. When it was placed on the patient's body, it proved to be a kind of portable X-ray machine, for all present could clearly see through it into the inside of the lady's body. It was like looking at fish in an aquarium, as Rainieri describes it. There was the heart beating away, the living lungs, and the blood flowing along the veins and arteries. The spirit then proceeded to plunge his hands into the bowl and pull out some dark matter, which was immediately thrown into the air and dematerialized. Chico Xavier has described a similar piece of equipment, and it reminds me of an interesting effect that I have often observed myself during psychic surgery, to be described in later chapters, when a kind of cavity appears on the skin into which the medium plunges the hands. It is not possible to make such a cavity remain in position without pressure by the hands, yet I have often seen them when no hands were touching them. The effect is exactly as if something invisible were pressing down on the skin, causing a conical depression deep enough to contain liquid. As far as materializations of human beings are concerned, and I am only mentioning here a small fraction of Rainieri's witnessed cases, either these things do happen or they do not. If they do not, I can only say that Rainieri was regularly deceived over a period of several years for no apparent reason and to nobody's profit. After meeting him and reading his accounts of a bewildering procession of visible disconnects that floated in and out of his sessions, making speeches, painting pictures, handing out gifts, doing operations, even dancing and playing tambourines, I am left with the feeling so well expressed by Sir Oliver Lodge with regard to the findings of Crookes, it is almost as difficult to resist the testimony as it is to accept the things testified. 3. Rainieri includes 5 photographs of allegedly materialized spirits in his book, each of which is endorsed with a handwritten statement by Chico Xavier. The name of the photographer and full technical details are given. The photographer makes the interesting observation that although he took each picture as the result of spoken orders by the spirit, he saw nothing unusual by the light of his flash at the time, and only found the spirit forms when he developed his film. The pictures are sharp and clear, but like all other such pictures they cannot easily be distinguished from simple fakes. I cannot resist the testimony of either Chico or Dr. Rainieri, yet I cannot easily accept the photographs to which they testify. I am inclined to think that still photos of spirits will never be convincing. Rainieri's chronicles are most convincing in their minor details. If we accept the bundle of sticks theory, according to which one incident, like one stick, may be weak whereas a lot of them together can be strong, then it must be admitted that the bundle of evidence that Rainieri has compiled assumes considerable strength. There was the time when the materialized Sheila handed out what felt like flowers to each of the 30 men and women present. Later, when the lights were turned on, it was found that each man held a red carnation while all the women had white ones, although there was no segregation of the sexes in the seating plan. There was the occasion when a spirit took hold of a 78 revolutions per minute record and folded it neatly into a roll, like a giant pancake, while Rainieri himself was holding on to it. At Rainieri's request, the spirit obligingly unfolded the disc again and then refolded it, repeating the whole performance with a second record. A photograph of the two twisted records is included in his book. They certainly look like two twisted records. Rainieri is also convincing when he is describing something he is clearly at a loss to explain. Here, the police training comes out and he simply states what he saw with his own eyes. Once, on entering the cabin where Pecksotino was in trance, he found the medium's body to be luminous all over, as if lit from within. Although wearing pajamas, he was radiating light like a firefly, illuminating the cabin after the manner of soft moonlight. Rainieri and 6 other persons took the medium's hand and examined the effect before the light gradually faded. On several occasions, luminous letters would appear in midair, spelling out answers to questions. This is a form of communication new to me. It seems the spirits are able to produce ethereal neon signs, and even write their names by this method. If Rainieri was subject to hallucinations, which I have no reason to suggest, they were certainly durable ones. There was, for instance, the night he was handed a stone-like object by a spirit, who told him it was radium and worth a fortune. As he held it, the stone became hotter until it was too hot to hold, and Rainieri's hand hurt for the next 8 days. Then there was the case of the luminous candy. A member of the group had brought some along to see if spirits had sweet teeth. They had, and like the friendly souls they were, they offered something in return. A spirit told Rainieri to hand out a piece of candy to each person present, which he did. Next, the spirit went up to him and shone his pale green light on his own piece, which immediately became luminous. On being told to go ahead and eat it, Rainieri put his candy in his mouth and began to chew it, whereupon an explosion of green light took place in his mouth. He found he could produce the same effect by rubbing bits of broken candy in his hands or crushing them on the floor under his shoe. Soon little green explosions were taking place all over the room as everybody experimented with the magic candy. The spirit of the investigator stirred inside Rainieri, who asked the amiable entity to illuminate a few more pieces of candy so that he could take them home. The entity duly did so, saying the effect would last for 24 hours. The following day, Rainieri examined his gift from the spirits in a darkened room in his own house. "I can affirm upon my word of honor," he says, "that the irrefutable and veridical phenomenon took place in all its grandeur and simplicity. The same greenish light and the same little explosions were repeated, far away from the medium. This, he decided, was solid evidence of the powers of the spirit world. The spirits seemed to enjoy playing around with their mysterious source of green light. One evening they announced that they were going to saturate the room with radioactivity, adding reassuringly that they would also throw in an element to counterbalance the prejudicial action of radium. A few moments later, all were surprised to find that by rubbing their clothing or their hair they suddenly became luminous, producing the same effect they had seen earlier on the body of the sleeping Pake Sotino. One cannot help feeling admiration for Pake Sotino, the medium who made all this fun possible for others, while he himself remained sound asleep in deep trance throughout every session, quite often, by the way, not in an enclosed cabin but in full view of all. Once, Rainieri went to wake him and was startled to see a globe of red light the size of an orange hovering about a yard over the medium's head. As Rainieri began to make passes over Pake Sotino's body to ease him out of the trance state, the light began to move around in front of him. He took both the medium's hands in his own, making sure the light was not connected to him in any way, and the mysterious fireball promptly passed in between his outstretched arms and around his back. At that point the lights were switched on, and the fireball slowly extinguished itself, seeming to back into a glass-fronted cupboard. "How can one leave a session like that without feeling edified?" Rainieri asks. The spirits attracted by the remarkable mediumship of Pake Sotino seemed anxious to prove their reality in a variety of ways. One of the most convincing to Rainieri was their fondness for making molds of their hands or feet in paraffin wax. This is a technique whereby the spirits supposedly leave their impressions on soft wax from which a plaster cast is made later. At some of his sessions, Rainieri would bring some paraffin to the boil and leave it bubbling over a flame throughout the evening, so that, as he puts it, anybody who put their bare hand or foot in it had better be a spirit. Beside the drum of wax there would be another full of cold water. He includes photographs of no less than 17 wax models of hands and 2 of feet in his book. 2 pictures show a pair of hands clasped tightly together. The feet, plus 2 of the hands, he identifies as those of his dead daughter, because of the position of 2 of the fingers that seemed to be joined together, as hers had appeared in life. The molds were made, he explains, by the spirit plunging hand or foot into the scalding wax, then into the water to cool and harden the wax covering. Next, the hand or foot was dematerialized, leaving a perfect hollow mold into which plaster was poured afterwards. A detail of the finger of one adult hand mold shows a clearly marked print. Readers are warned that attempts to fake this effect might be very painful. Other spirit visitors to Rainieri's sessions would leave behind evidence in the form of portrait sketches. 10 of these are reproduced in his book, one being an excellent likeness of Alan Karg. One spirit who stopped by one evening was Rainieri's old friend Jean-Jacques Rousseau, 1712-1778, this time through the mediumship not of Pake Sotino but of a regular member of the group named Amaury Santos. It was a private session, with only Rainieri and the medium present. To the soothing sounds of Gounod's Ave Maria, Santos went into trance, then suddenly sat bolt upright and began to speak in French. After a lengthy discourse he switched to Portuguese, explaining that he had used his native tongue merely to establish his identity, and that he was perfectly capable of speaking Portuguese through this particular medium. "Remember that speech you made at the Mineiro High School in Belo Horizonte?" the voice asked. "Well, it was I who helped you write it. I've been with you ever since you were a kid with long hair who hated to go to the barber." Rainieri notes that when young he did indeed have long hair and had an aversion to having it cut, and that moreover even before being interested in spiritism he had seemed to be haunted by the ideas of Rousseau. Once, a school friend had interrupted him in the course of some impassioned outburst with the words, "Oh, come off it. That's one of Rousseau's ideas and it's been demolished ages ago. Who's Rousseau? Rainieri had asked. I've never heard of him. But on several subsequent occasions, people kept telling him that he sounded like Rousseau when he spoke. This fellow kept getting between my brain and my tongue. And now here he was in person, or rather coming through the person of Maurice Santos. He and Rainieri, he explained, had been friends in Greece, Rome, India and Babylon. The world crumbles, but the spirit marches on, was Rousseau's final message to his old pal on Earth. One of Rainieri's most interesting experiences took place mostly outside the séance room. It concerned a girl named Iphigenia Franatilda Sectione, who might well be called the reluctant medium, for she both rejected spiritism altogether and refused to believe in her own mediumship. Her story began when her father turned up at a center in Belo Horizonte, which Rainieri was attending, to say that his daughter was in a desperate condition, suffering all kinds of horrible attacks that left her face and body grotesquely distorted, and that doctors had given her 6 months to live. The man was a Catholic who admitted that spiritism was wholly repugnant to him. He was convinced that spiritist cures were the work of the devil seeking to seduce human souls. This attitude is still to be found in some die-hard Catholic circles even today. But for his daughter's sake he would try anything, although if the local priest found out that he had been to a spiritist center, he would surely have him excommunicated. As so often happens in Brazil, a Catholic was turning to spiritism as a last resort, after neither his own faith nor his local doctor could do any more for him. Spiritists are quite used to such situations, and however persecuted they may have been by the Catholic Church, and to some extent still are, they make no distinction between the faiths of people needing help. Rainieri and the group's medium accordingly went along to the Franatilda Sectione home, where they found Iphigenia, then aged 19, lying in a twisted and rigid heap on her bed. She was a veritable monstrosity, Rainieri recalls. The medium began to give her some passes, and Rainieri, who knew his card, noticed that Iphigenia would groan and tremble as the medium's hands passed over her body, although they never touched her. Aha, Rainieri thought to himself, here we have a case of exteriorization. This is nowadays usually known as OAB, out-of-body experience. The passes seemed to have some effect, for the patient straightened herself out and sat up on the bed, though still apparently in trance. Rainieri also gave her some passes, and at last she woke up and seemed fairly normal, so they left her and went away. Some days later, however, she had another attack. Her father again went round to the spiritist center for help, and since the regular medium was not there at the time, Rainieri went alone to see the patient. While giving her passes, he noticed that even with his hands 9 inches from her body, she would react as if she were being touched. He concluded that he had a case of possession in front of him, one in which the paraspirit body had been pushed out by an invading entity. Rainieri therefore set about making contact with the invader, talking normally to it, and getting an immediate response. Iphigenia then began to speak in a clear voice, describing or rather reliving a previous existence in England. Rainieri managed to get her out of trance by placing her hand on her head and calling out her name. She woke up with no memory of what she had been saying, and seemed completely normal. Rainieri then assured her father that his daughter's problem was not a medical one, and that she could be cured by some prolonged treatment at his spiritist center. The desperate father agreed at once. At the center, they were able to observe the young medium more closely, finding that she could produce some astonishing phenomena while in trance. She could write lengthy messages in the dark, without her hand running off the paper, putting all the accents in the right places and separating the words correctly. She could tell at once what object was in somebody's pocket or was being held behind her back. She could give descriptions of what was happening in another place, even apparently in another world. She could give vivid accounts of no less than 4 of her previous incarnations, repeating passages to order on different days without altering any detail. She even reproduced symptoms of tuberculosis, from which she had suffered in a previous life, spitting out blood that made Rhaenyra's stomach turn over. Most interesting of all, though, was the way she would cry out in obvious pain when a needle was brought her within 9 to 18 inches of her body, as if she were really feeling it touch her skin. She would also react, although in trance, when people came close to her, the distance varying from day to day from 2 feet to 5 yards. She also developed X-ray vision, describing the internal disorders of a person placed in front of her, and prescribing treatment. While in trance, her own body would become freezing cold, though her head would heat up alarmingly. In fact, she seemed capable of producing almost every phenomenon known to spiritist mediumship. Interested as they were in all this, Rhaenyra and his colleagues took care of the immediate problem, that of curing a case of possession. This they did along conventional Cardassist lines, with repeated passes and conversations with the invading entity. Iphigenia Phren A tilde section A made a total recovery, got married, had a baby and lived happily ever after. She refused, however, to have anything more to do with spiritism. "I'm not going to any more meetings," she announced after her cure. "All that happens is that I go to sleep and only wake up when it's all over. It may be great fun for you, but it certainly isn't for me." She could have been another Chico Xavier, Rhaenyra laments. "A medium," says Rhaenyra, "is an open door to the invisible world. What comes through the door depends to a large extent upon the personality of the medium, and it is quite wrong to suppose that the spirit world consists entirely of angelic beings devoted to our welfare. There are plenty of evil spirits around, also others who seem to have nothing better to do than fool about and amuse themselves at our expense by such elementary, to them, parlor tricks as lifting up tables and throwing things around the room. This would seem to be the level of spirit most often to be found at some of the more widely publicized seances, and those who find spirit communications trivial, as many are, should blame the mediums and not the spirits. The more advanced the medium, the better the phenomena are likely to be, though not necessarily the most spectacular. Spiritists regard phenomena as merely a means by which the spirits offer proof of their existence. Once any given spiritist group feels it is in touch with a good team of constructive spirits, it no longer has any need of such entertainment, and can get on with its more serious work of spiritual regeneration and raising the level of one's personal life in addition to helping others to do the same. The São Paulo State Spiritist Federation, for instance, is today a highly respectable institution that is far too busy with its extensive program of education and social welfare to have any time for physical effects seances. In its early days, however, as one of its founders, another senior police officer, incidentally, has assured me personally, such sessions used to be held at the Federation headquarters, though members now feel they have grown out of that stage. Rhaenyra emphasizes the fact that mediums themselves are not likely to know much about mediumship, since the best of them are out cold all the time they are at work. The long-suffering Peixotina once told him that his greatest ambition was to be able to watch a materialization seance, but mediums as far advanced as he was must be content with a life of total self-sacrifice. This may explain why there are so few of them around. Therefore, Rhaenyra points out, one should not pay too much attention to what ex-mediums, who have lost their powers, may say about themselves. Confessions of fraud have been known since the earliest days of spiritualism, but assuming the medium concerned to have possessed genuine powers at one stage, how would he or she know what had gone on during trance, except from the testimony of those present? As far as the serious researcher is concerned, mediums are often of little assistance. The spirits themselves, however, have given their own views on the question of materialization, notably in a passage from Words from Emmanuel, one of Chico Xavier's books which came out in 1954, in which his chief guide, Emmanuel, explains that well-directed curiosity is the beginning of all knowledge, and that even well-developed spirits may indulge now and then in a little of what he calls vibratory descent, if they feel it will do any good. Materializing is simply a matter of condensation, Emmanuel points out, or of reconverting fluidic values and making visible the subtle and intangible. After all, he observes, the world itself is one vast long-term materialization phenomenon, much of it having previously existed only in human minds. As to how it is done, another of Chico's books, Missionaries of the Light, 1945, gives all the necessary details. It is clear that materialization, though not particularly difficult, calls for some fairly elaborate preparation on the other plane, and the better class of spirits obviously do not go through the lengthy process unless there is some valid reason why they should. Paik Soutinho died in June, 1966. His reputation as one of Brazil's most honorable and dedicated mediums intact until the end. Since he never sought any kind of publicity, little has been written about him in Brazil, and none as far as I am aware elsewhere until now. Fortunately, some of the members of the spiritist groups in Belo Horizonte, Pedro Leopoldo and Rio de Janeiro where he produced his best effects were still alive in 1973. And I was fortunate enough to secure strong corroboration for Rainieri's evidence from two of the best known, the distinguished Brazilian professor of linguistics Rubens Romanelli, and Newton Bouchat, a very prominent name in Brazilian spiritism as speaker and writer in addition to being a man of great intelligence and apparent honesty. Romanelli attended only one session with Paik Soutinho, held in 1948 at the home of a regular member of the Rainieri group named Gersors, in the city of Belo Horizonte. Rainieri himself was not present on this occasion, but among the six or seven others named as being at the session he describes were a local doctor and a professor of engineering from the local university. Romanelli, who was passing through Belo Horizonte at the time, was taken to the séance somewhat against his will. He had never heard of Paik Soutinho and was not particularly interested in tales of alleged materialization. A friend insisted on taking him along, however, and he duly went to the source home one evening to undergo what he describes as the most impressive experience of my life, choosing his words carefully, as befits his position as a leading authority on the history of Indo-European languages. The professor now describes what he saw. I was somewhat skeptical regarding these phenomena, for I had already attended some materialization sessions that had left me totally unconvinced. There were two rooms separated by a partition which had been removed for the occasion. Paik Soutinho lay down on a couch, wearing pajamas, while we sat in a semicircle in the other room. It was completely dark, somebody put a record on the player, and we said an initial prayer. I kept my eyes open, looking in the direction of Paik Soutinho, but saw nothing. The darkness was total, but all of a sudden I noticed a whitish milky mist gradually forming a little to the right of where he was. As this cloud began to condense, the room became lighter, and as the cloud grew both upwards and downwards, it gradually began to take a shape that was visibly that of a human being. Within, I suppose, about 10 minutes, we were face to face with the figure of a very beautiful woman. The tresses of her hair fell over her bust, she had fair hair and blue eyes, and she came walking slowly towards us. I could hear her steps sounding on the floor, they were the footsteps of somebody of flesh and blood, which convinced me it was a materialized being. She stopped about 3 meters away from us and greeted us with the words, "My beloved brothers in our Lord, Jesus Christ." As she spoke, we noticed a strong German accent. She seemed to be speaking Portuguese with some difficulty. So this would be Sheila, a spirit that often materialized through Paik Soutinho. I wasn't satisfied that she had merely greeted us verbally. I wanted her to shake hands so that we could really feel we were faced with a materialized being. She held out her hand, and I took it, feeling the resistance of a carnal body, the warmth of a human hand. She repeated the same gesture with the others present. I noticed that her eyes were lacking in brilliance, and asked why. She explained that this was quite normal during materialization because it was not possible to reproduce the gleam of human eyes. I also noticed a dark patch between her right arm and her thorax, and she explained that since the medium was suffering from a cold, it was not possible for her to materialize fully. She said this was proof that she really was a spirit, and told me to pick up the cover of a record album and pass it between her arm and her thorax, which I did without difficulty, finding that there was no physical connection between her arm and her thorax. The arm gave the impression of being loose. She explained that her arm was not loose,